Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your very, very excited host, Shane Bacon. This Azalea Heavy episode of the Clubhouse is brought to you by Ogio. I always tell people the two things golfers need to upgrade are their grips and their golf bags. You get a new driver yearly, a new putter weekly, but what about what holds all that equipment? Ogio's Cirrus stand bag is a beauty and exactly what you're looking for when shopping for something new. Weighing just 3.2 pounds, it's one of the lightest bags on the market. But just because it's light doesn't mean you're giving up pocket space. Seven different compartments for gear. The Cirrus is one of the most versatile that Ogio makes and the lightest. Check that bag out and their entire collection at ogio.com. And yes, it's official. That app has been updated. Washington Road is probably already bumper to bumper, and that means one thing and one thing only. It is, in fact, Masters Week. We circle it on our calendars right when we flip them over, and it's finally here. We have a fun one for you this Monday. Nobody knows the Masters and Augusta better than the Augusta Chronicle, Scott Michaud. Scott has covered the Masters since 1997. He has as much insight into the event as anyone, and he stopped by to give us some info and to get us pumped up for Thursday. Scott also gave some great tips for first-time visitors of the Masters. So if that is you, make sure you listen to all of his points, sneaky places to get to watch some golf, things to eat, places to grab drinks you can't grab anywhere else on the property. He is a bucket of information, and he was very, very helpful, and it was a great conversation. After Scott, we have Paul Stankowski, two-time PGA Tour winner. Stankowski finished tied for fifth back at that 1997 Masters, and he gives some incredible and unique, never-before-heard stories of that week 20 years ago when Tiger Woods introduced himself. Not only us, he introduced himself and really showed what he was made of and what he was about to do to the PGA Tour world, to the pros as well. You have to stick around for Paul's chat, because not only did he talk about his first Masters back in 1996, didn't get to play a practice round, some great stories from that, but some of the quotes he had, including one before the final round in 97, when he was a group out of that final group of Tiger Woods, something he said, and he just found this out not too long ago, it'll make you laugh, trust me, especially now knowing what Tiger did to the PGA Tour for over a decade. Great stuff from Stankowski, so I hope you enjoyed as much as I did chatting with him. I will be out at Augusta National all week long. I promise, or I will try my hardest to have a couple of those clubhouse koozies in my back pocket at all times. So if you see me, don't hesitate to come say hi, introduce yourself, shake hands, high five. I'll give you a koozie, free of charge. I don't even need a pimento cheese. I probably already had about five at that point. Just ask. That's why I have them. That's why I ordered them. They're for you guys listening and following along. So if you see me, say hi. I'll be there all week long. I will be writing a lot for foxsports.com. So if you want to check that out, there's two easy ways to do it. Go to foxsports.com/golf, or really the easiest way is to go follow me on Facebook. It's facebook.com/ShaneBaconGolf. And that's where I'll post all my articles, posts, stories, podcasts, really everything I'm doing for the week will just be there. It's a little bit easier than Twitter simply because you won't have my try-to-be-hard, funny tweets kind of mixed in the middle of them. So that's facebook.com/ShaneBaconGolf. You, of course, can follow me on Twitter at Shane Bacon. Follow the podcast at The Clubhouse Pod on Twitter. Our newsletters will be rolling out. They will be hefty. They will be Masters heavy. They'll have a lot of good goodies in there. That'll be on Monday and Wednesday and possibly on Friday. I have a big piece on Jordan Spieth going up on Wednesday. So make sure you subscribe to that newsletter. If you go to the Clubhouse Pod account on Twitter, it's pinned right there atop it. Sign up and boom, it'll be in your inbox. Okay, the household items are done. I cannot believe the Masters is finally here. One of the best sports weeks of the entire year. I hope you're as excited as I am. Let's get to the guests. And we welcome into the Clubhouse the sports columnist at the Augusta Chronicle, Scott Michaud. Scott's been covering all things sports and, of course, all things Masters since joining that team in 2001. He's covered the Masters since 1997. And, Scott, I have to start with an incredibly serious question. Are we going to be seeing azaleas this year at the Masters?
Well, you'll probably be seeing a few blooms, but the emphasis will be on the word few. It really popped and peaked a few weeks ago, and then we had a couple of cold nights, and the frost took care of a lot of the blooms around a town. So I would assume that even the magicians and horticulturists at Augusta National aren't capable of preventing nature taking its course. So it's going to be a little bit less color from the azaleas, a few more dogwoods maybe, but it won't be quite the same.
Well, the sports world tends to turn, you know, their collective heads to golf this week. This is really the first week that the sports world in general pays attention to golf. You know, casual fans get pumped for the Masters a couple of weeks out. Journalists, columnists start to work on their stuff maybe a month, month and a half out. When do you prep? When does your prep begin for the Masters every year?
It's funny. The morning after the Masters ends, David Westin, who's been covering, this will be his 39th Masters that he's covered for the Augusta Chronicle, he and I sit in his house in his kitchen and basically start our draft for the next year's Masters preview section. Basically so we can just talk about the things while they're fresh in our mind, because a lot of times when you start going back, you know, 10 months later and trying to figure out what happened the year before, you know, the headlines stand out, but some of the little stories you tend to forget. So we try to talk about those right away and get them down in print, saying, oh, we got to remember that this guy, you know, birdied half of the back nine, or you know, he had a penalty that cost him the cut, or things like that. So it really does begin the morning after.
Yeah, it's like your golf dream journal. You've got to write it down when it's fresh on your mind. Don't forget any little detail. I've been trying to remember. I'm doing a piece on Jordan Spieth, shocking, I know, but I've been trying to remember his run from 13 through 18. I've got a piece coming out on Wednesday at Fox Sports about kind of what happened after 12, and it took me a while to remember exactly what happened, you know, him, what he did on the 14th hole, what he did on the 15th hole. So it's probably nice to have little notes jotted down so you don't forget those little things.
No, it really is. And that was something we finally learned from experience, because you forget a couple of things and you're like, oh, how do we forget something so blatantly obvious as that? But so much happens on that Sunday afternoon in particular that you really you end up getting tunnel vision over whatever story you're going to write that day, that you've got to take in the rest of it quickly, or it does just sort of disappear.
Well, I was reading a Golf Digest article about Augusta National trying to buy up land from Augusta Country Club and the ongoing tug of war between those two clubs. And I first wanted to start, why is it that Augusta National wants that land right behind the 12th green so badly?
Well, I think the biggest reason is they have been purchasing land around their property for a long time. They want to have a buffer all the way around, and that's really the closest intrusion on their golf course. I mean, that fairway overlooks Augusta National and Amen Corner, and I don't think they really like during Masters, you know, people looking up and seeing golf carts go by on the adjacent golf course. So I think that's the biggest thing, is they want to have a buffer. I don't think it's that they want to move the 13th hole another 100 yards back or do anything like that. They just want to control their perimeter. To me, that's the most pressing issue for them. Now, that might also allow them access things, you know, different access points around the course, maybe even different vantage points of Amen Corner in the future. But, you know, there's a lot of things they would be able to do with it once they get it. But, you know, some people have joked they can put the whole monorail around the property and take you from points to points. But, you know, I think really what they want to do is just control their perimeter.
Yeah, I mean, is there the article made it seem like there's a little bit of angst between those two clubs. Is there real angst between, you know, the country club and National?
There's probably always been a little bit of a rivalry between the two of them, even though I would say just about every single local member of Augusta National is definitely a member of Augusta Country Club, because that's where they want to play the rest of the year. That's where they go to do their practicing. That's where they, you know, that's where the community ties are. So there's a little awkward situation probably for those members who are members of both. But in terms of, I don't know, sort of a general rivalry, if you will, between the two, I think there's always been a little animosity from, you know, the other side of the creek to the attention and everything that the Masters gets at Augusta National.
So being the voice of Augusta, like the real, you know, the print voice of this town, of this place, of this sports world, how awkward is it if you do feel the need to criticize the Masters or criticize something that's going on? I mean, do you get calls if you write something that's maybe not glowing about this week or this event or the golf course?
Well, nobody's ever called and complained or done anything like that I know about. Every now and then, if I write something, I used to sometimes get emails from their former communications person, Glenn Greenspan, who would send me some information that thought he might help me in the next time I write about this subject. And clearly, they didn't think the angle that I took was the right one. So there'll be things like that. And every now and then, you can tell my reception might be a little bit different at the front desk when I walk in the next morning. But nobody's ever done it or said anything to me about it. I mean, if they need to be criticized, you know, I'm not going to try to back down from that. It's something that, you know, this is the job we take seriously, and I hope that they take, any kind of constructive criticism in the right manner.
Well, you know, you're around locals there all the time. I mean, that's where you live. Do the locals in the area love the Masters, deal with the Masters, or dislike the Masters?
I think it's probably the same as you'd find in St. Andrews or any other town that's synonymous with an event in the golf course. There's some people that love it, and there's some people who hate it. A lot of people, you know, like to get out of town during Masters week because they don't want to put up with any of it. Other people get out of town because they're making money selling or renting their house or doing things like that. And there are other people that just think this is the greatest thing that's ever happened. It is an economic generator in the city. It's one of the best things that Augusta has going for it. So I think most people appreciate it along that, line. But yeah, of course, it interferes with people's lives 1 week out of the year in ways with the traffic and everything else that comes with it. And there's some headaches that come with it. But I think in general, a lot of people love it.
Okay, you've been attacking the pimento cheese sandwich for a long time, and this attack must stop. You're an egg salad guy through and through. First, why is the egg salad so good? I haven't fallen in love with this thing yet. And second, why all the hate for the pimento cheese?
I don't have hate for pimento cheese. I love pimento cheese. I make pimento cheese sandwiches at home all the time. I just don't particularly like their version of the pimento cheese. It just doesn't do as much for me. But the egg salad is delicious. It's the most underrated sandwich that they have there. And I think the pimento cheese, just because it seems like a novelty and it seems more Southern, has been getting all of the attention for so long that it's just, it trumps the egg salad when the egg salad is better in every way. Everybody I know, except you, prefers the egg salad. We did that media survey last year, and it overwhelmingly won. And pimento cheese was way down, listed in a tie with none. You know, the people who just don't like sandwiches for whatever reason. So I think, you know, it's just, I don't know, maybe I just think the egg salad is underappreciated and it needs to get a little more love.
Well, one of the things I want to do this year is I want to have a day where I try everything on the menu, and I'm going to start. You gave me a suggestion with the egg salad, and that suggestion was add a little salt and pepper and bring bacon from breakfast to put on that thing. Have you experimented with plenty of these types of things over the years to get it perfect?
I've experimented with a lot of little different things. I mean, I like it just plain. First of all, it's great. But it's salt and pepper is something I'll put on it every time now. But the bacon, I got to give credit where credit's due. Jason Sobel of ESPN.com is the one that turned me on to the bacon edition. And it really does add a whole nother layer to it.
Well, that's something for people to try that have never been. And I was going to ask you this a bit later, but it seems like a perfect time. Somebody that's going to the Masters for the first time, give them two or three things that you would tell them to do or must experience while they're there.
Well, in terms of the food, I would go with just about everything. There's a specialty drink down at Amen Corner that they serve on only the 12th hole. It's kind of a mixture of pink lemonade and blue Powerade, and it, you know, looks like the azaleas in springtime or something like that. That's one that's very popular, and you can only get that at the one concession stand down there at the 12th hole. Of course, the egg salad, and everybody who comes for the first time needs to try the pimento cheese. I mean, you can't go home and have somebody ask you, did you have the pimento cheese, and say, no, I didn't. I mean, it would be like playing Augusta National and not playing the 12th hole. You have to have it. So those would be the two biggest things. And the other thing I would tell people to do is don't just sit in one place. Walk the course. To me, you really get the full experience at Augusta by walking around and seeing everything. There's so many great vantage points all over that course. that you're shorting yourself if you just go stick a chair down an aiming corner and spend all day, or stick a chair by the 18th green.
Yeah, is there an underrated hole or place that you would say, tell people, you know, I mean, you've seen aiming corner, you've seen 18, you've seen maybe the first tee or the first green. Is there a place that you would tell people to go that maybe not going to be so crowded, but it's a great place to watch golf?
Yeah, when I took my wife there, the first time she ever went, and she just didn't like sitting in all the crowds, and she was not tall enough to see over most of the people in most of the most popular areas. So the best place to go is behind the 14th green. I think you can, it's a little bit elevated on the hills, kind of looking down the green. The green is fascinating to watch people try to putt on it and hit into it, because it's one of the most remarkably contoured greens in the world. And you end up getting an unobstructed view. Somewhere around that green, you'll be able to just sit there and nobody will be in front of you, and you can see everything that happens there. So that's really a nice little spot for people.
Okay, weather always plays a huge part Masters week, and I was just going to ask, leading up to the Masters, because we've seen the forecast for the week, leading up to the Masters, what's the weather been like, and how is that going to make the course play this year compared to maybe a year's past?
Well, the weather's been fantastic so far. I mean, we have really had the warmest winter that I've ever encountered since being in Georgia. I mean, February had more 70-degree days than it had days below 50. So it was really such a nice winter that everybody that's been out to the golf course says it's in perfect condition. Now, of course, before the tournament, it looks like we're going to get some rain. So it might soften things a little bit, but don't get too carried away with how soft it's going to be, because they got stuff underneath those fairways and greens that suck all the moisture back out, so they can keep it firm and fast. So it's not going to turn into like a Congressional in 2011 or something like that. It's still going to be a firm and really well-conditioned golf course this year. I just hope that the rain is not so hard that for the fan experience, walking around outside where we all tread in the same place and it gets a little bit muddy, I hope that stays to a minimum. But the course itself is going to be perfect.
Yeah, I mean, does that type of feel or does that type of condition play into a certain type of player? Like, do you look at somebody and say, the way it is expected to play is going to benefit player A or player B?
Well, if it gets a little bit softer, it's going to benefit the guys who can hit it farther. And the guy who I think might help out the most would be Rory McIlroy. I mean, he's shown that he can play really well in majors and jump out to big leads and run away with it on softer golf courses. So I think that maybe Rory, who's got some things to try to get over at Augusta, you know, he's always had 1-9 holes that has derailed his chance every time. This might actually be something that is beneficial to him if he thinks, you know what, I can go attack this golf course a little more and gets a little more confidence on it. So I would look for a guy who hits it a long way, like Rory, and who might prefer it to be just a little softer than usual.
Yeah, you know, I was going to ask you, I mean, you've been covering the Masters for 20 years. I mean, 1997 was your first, of course. That's the big Tiger win. And the favorites, besides Tiger, really, don't tend to win, I would say. And so Dustin's coming in the favorite. I mean, he's playing incredibly well, and he's won 3 in a row and all that stuff. But if you looked past Dustin, is there somebody atop your list that you feel like this is going to be their Masters to win, this is going to be their Masters to dominate, besides, you know, Dustin, Rory, Jordan, or even Jason Day if he does show up and play?
Yeah, I think obviously those guys, the favorites, if they don't win, they at least usually contend. I mean, it might not be every one of them, but the handful of guys that you think are going to play well at Augusta, half of them are going to, and they're going to be in the mix. But the one guy who maybe should be considered a favorite is Phil Mickelson. I just think he's playing some beautiful golf. I love the way he was putting at the match play last week. And you know, he's 46 years old, which is a number that has a little bit of magic in it at Augusta. And that was, Jack in 86 was 46. And I think Phil is the guy most likely to have a Jack Nicklaus moment at some point. He's the guy I would think would possibly beat Jack's record now that Tiger seems to be a little bit, more suspect on his chances in the future.
That's the nicest way anybody's ever said Tiger's done. I'm really proud of you for doing that. You really painted that. That was lipsticks on a pig, as good as I've ever heard.
Well, I'm not going to go as far as to say he's done. At the one place I won't say that is Augusta. I don't think he's going to contend this year. But Phil, I would watch out for Phil. And then I think John Rahm has made a statement too that he might come in here and surprise everybody and have a Fuzzy Zeller moment and win as a rookie.
Yeah, it would be fun. Now, you talked to me before we got going a little bit about the new media center. So, I mean, there's a lot of new things at the Masters. It tends to be every single year. From your first start in 97 to now, how different is Augusta National really from start to finish from a media perspective?
Well, I tell you, the first time I went to Augusta in 97, it was basically my favorite place on earth, because you really felt like you had just walked into somebody's private club for a week. You know, they had temporary gates that you walked through. You parked where the current driving range is now. That was our parking lot. It was just a grass field with gravel under it, so that, you know, you wouldn't get stuck in the mud at the end of the day. And you felt like you were just going up to a club championship for the week. And inside, you know, there's none of that, you know, corporate stuff that you see at other golf tournaments. So it really was a special kind of place. Now it has been gussied up so much that it's a very different experience. Now it's much more like a golf theme park in many ways. The concessions are perfect. The entrance gate is perfect. Everything's pristine. That driving range is so different. You know, it's like a minor league ballpark to go watch people hit, just practice their shots, whereas the old one was just some bleachers set up behind a little warm-up range. From that standpoint, everything is very, very different now. It's very nice, and everybody loves it, and there's nothing to complain about on that run, but I kind of feel that it's lost its sort of homey feel that it used to have.
Well, of all the Masters that you've covered, which one has been the most surprising to you come Sunday, and which one has been the most memorable?
Well, there have been a lot of memorable ones. I mean, it's going to be hard to top the first one I ever covered with Tiger Woods winning by 12 strokes and basically changing golf for the next 20 years and what we thought was possible. That one has to be the greatest performance I've ever seen any athlete have when the pressure was on and people were expecting him to do something special, and he did. But Phil Mickelson in 2004, the year that Charles Schwartzel won, it might not have been a champion that everybody was expecting, but it was a show that maybe was more unbelievable than most, with I think 8 or 9 guys had the lead at some point on Sunday, and we're all fighting each other on the back nine. And it's kind of the show that, you know, we want to see every year and we rarely get. So those would be the ones that stand out the most in my mind.
Is there a hole you would say is extremely underrated at Augusta National?
Well, the fourth hole, to me, is just such a brute for those guys. I mean, if you and I went and played from the members' tees, it's not so bad. You know, you pull out a 6-iron and you can get it up there. Those guys are hitting from 230 yards into a green that just doesn't want to, you know, accept your golf ball. So it really is, to me, the hardest hole out there. And I think it says something that's only been aced once in tournament play, and by a guy named Jeff Sluman, who you wouldn't think would be the guy to make the hole-in-one on the long hole.
Yeah, he pounded a hybrid or a 3-wood up there at it, and it just went in. That's a nice little thing to have. That's a nice takeaway. Well, I wanted to just end with this. As you mentioned, you spend the week after basically recapping what happened and preparing for the Masters the next year. Say it's 2 weeks after the Masters, so say we're 2 weeks from now. What's life like for you? What's life like for the town of Augusta? And how strange is it to turn your attention from the biggest sports spectacle in the world that week to now going and covering, you know, not just local sports, but, you know, sports that are more specific to that area?
Well, to me, that stretch of the year is the hardest stretch of the year, because there's not as much going on. We simply just don't, you know, when it's college football season, I know what I'm doing, any kind of part of football season. But there's, you know, there's just not as much going on, you know, in late April and May for us to sink our teeth into around here. So for me, it's always a big challenge. Now I've got to, try to come up with stories. So that's difficult, but it's also just a little bit of relief because for a little while, I don't have to worry about the Masters. I don't have to worry about the cover story yet. I don't have to worry about next year's special sections. I don't need to worry about any of that stuff. you know, you can just sort of take a breath for a little while before the summer starts, and you start going and, you know, seeing the reigning champion and trying to set things up and all of that kind of stuff that goes with getting ready for the next year. So there is a nice little calm after the storm that I enjoy. I think Augusta in general feels that way. It gets, you know, just reverts to being, you know, Augusta.
Is there a local restaurant or bar or spot that you would tell people, if you want to grab a drink this week or grab some food this week, go here, that's maybe not on everybody's Yelp review page?
Well, the places that I go, I end up going to the same place that everybody else who goes to the Masters during that week. And, you know, I'll go to the French Market for dinner somewhere in Augusta to get a drink. Those would be kind of the favorite hangouts because, frankly, you want to sort of get that feel and that atmosphere. It's basically middle-aged spring break. So you don't want to go to the quiet spot. You want to kind of go hang out with everybody and sort of be part of the event. So those, you know, I would say somewhere in Augusta might be the bar that I would recommend.
All right. Tell people where they can find your work, read your stuff this week, keep up with everything you're doing.
Well, we've been rolling out our preview stuff already on Augusta.com, and we got a lot of stuff in our, you know, our cover stories on Tiger's 20th anniversary, and Danny Willett will be coming out in the next couple of days. So that's where all of our Masters coverage is available on Augusta.com.
Well, Scott, I appreciate you taking some time. I know you're super busy, an exciting week. Hopefully we get, as you mentioned, you said Schwartzel. I keep kind of referring back to that. I hope we get a little bit of that battle this week. We've got a lot of big names playing well. I'd love to see them all converge on that back nine Sunday.
That's always the dream. You hope all the big names are there for a shootout.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
A quick break to remind you that the stage is set for the first golf major of 2017, and it all begins this Thursday in Augusta, Georgia. To celebrate, DraftKings.com is hosting a free fantasy golf contest with $100,000 in total prizes up for grabs. Whether you live and breathe golf like me, or you're looking to try a new fantasy sport, 1 week fantasy golf at DraftKings is for you. And fantasy golf on DraftKings is easy to play. Just pick six golfers before the tournament tees off Thursday morning, then sit back and follow the action live. Rack up points for streaks, per hole performances, tournament finishes, and more. Outscore the competition and you win. You can't get closer to the action than this unless you are standing on the 17th green. Millions of fantasy sports fans just like you have experienced the excitement of DraftKings. Now it's your turn. Remember, the tournament starts this Thursday morning, so hurry to DraftKings.com now. Get free entry in the $100,000 contest for golf's first major with promo code Clubhouse. That's code Clubhouse to play free for your share of $100,000 in total prizes this Thursday, only at DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Now, let's head over to Paul Stankowski. And we now welcome in a two-time PGA Tour winner, and I looked this up, perfect PGA Tour playoff record, 2-0. Paul Stankowski joining me here. You can follow him on Twitter, at Paul Stankowski. It's spelled basically like it reads. Paul, welcome to the clubhouse. First things first, perfect playoff record? Well, what's that about?
Well, I guess I'm not good enough to finish off an event in 72 holes, so I needed more. But yeah, that was fun. I forgot that I did that. But beat Brandel Chamblee in Atlanta for my first one. I made a birdie, and he made more than a birdie. I'll just say that. And then in Hawaii, it was me and Jim Furyk and Mike Reed, Radar. And Radar went, I think he went two holes, and but Jimmy and I went four holes extra. And I believe I made three birdies and a par there. So I like playoffs. And the good thing about a playoff, Shane, is that the worst you can do is finish second.
That's always nice. That's like being in the skins game. I mean, if nothing else, you're still winning.
Exactly. You win a skin, you're like, all right, cool, I'm out ahead. So obviously super excited to you know, think back and look back on those two pretty special weeks to think that a kid who grew up dreaming of playing on the PGA Tour and maybe someday winning, you know, I got to do both, and it was pretty sweet. So good memories, if anything.
Yeah, well, we worked the match play together for PGA Tour Live, and we got a chance to kind of chat after over a couple of beers, just really about kind of your career. And you told me a great story about 1996, and I'm really having you on. I want to focus on 97 because, of course, it's been 20 years since Tiger, you know, routed the field with 12 shots and all that good stuff and welcomed everybody to what would be a dominant run that was Tiger Woods. But in 1996, you went into the Masters on a streak unlike anything really we may have ever seen up until right now. I mean, Dustin Johnson winning three times in a row. You went into that 1996 Masters. You'd won a nationwide tour event. The next week, you won the Bell South Classic, and you rolled into the Masters, and people were asking the question, can this kid keep this streak going and snag, you know, basically now a Web.com victory, a PGA Tour victory, and a major in consecutive weeks? Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that was the talk, and I quickly kind of debunked that with like a 153 or something over the next 2 days, and was driving out Magnolia Lane on my way home early, but... yeah, that was a fun week. You know, it's like I started out the 96 season missing every cut on the West Coast. But I was always encouraged. I felt like there was something good each week. Something good was happening in my game. I just wasn't performing, wasn't shooting the numbers, but I might have shot 68, 74 or 75, 69 and missed a cut by a shot or two. Anyway, I finally made a cut in New Orleans. So that's pretty late in the season. But I made the cut in New Orleans and didn't have a very good weekend. But I cast a check. The next week was the Players' Championship. So I went down the road from New Orleans to Lafayette, Louisiana to play in the Nike Tour event at the time. So the web.com. And I went out there and I won. And so, there was no writing on the wall. There was no like, okay, this guy's due. I mean, I was due maybe to maybe shoot a good round, but I didn't think I could put four in a row together. I hadn't done that for a long time. So I win there. They tell me I can go play Tallahassee the next week on the Nike Tour. And then I'm like, at the time I was about 6th or 10th alternate, I think, to get into Atlanta, the Bell South Classic. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to go to Atlanta. We have some friends there in Marietta, the Masons, that I was going to stay with. And my wife had never been, so I was going to introduce her to them. And it was going to be a fun time, whether I got in or not. And so I went to Atlanta. And then Steve Hart pulls out with a bad back on Wednesday afternoon. And I got the call and I got the slot. And, I went on to win. I kind of backdoored it a little bit. David Duval and Tommy Tolles, I think Duval had a 3-shot lead or something going into Sunday. I was in the second to last group with my childhood. One of my two heroes, Tom Watson was the first and then Fred Couples. So I'm playing with Freddie on Sunday, my first time paired with him and I won. And the next morning I wake up and my wife and I are driving down Magnolia freaking Lane. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So, the dreams, I never missed a Masters tournament on television from the time that I could remember watching TV. At the time, they only showed the back nine on TV, right? I mean, so we never even got to see the first few holes. And so, yeah, it was a dream come true to get to tee it up there in Augusta. It was surreal, the media definitely had a story right there about some kid they couldn't even pronounce. I remember when I won on Sunday in Atlanta, what's his face? Gary McCord couldn't even pronounce my last name. And he said it on national TV and he added about four more consonants and vowels and syllables to the name. So he butchered it, but he had never had to say that before.
Right.
And I don't think, Stankowski had been uttered on TV prior to that. So it was definitely a dream scenario. It was an overwhelming experience. It was completely clueless. I didn't have the word no in my vocabulary. So, I answered every interview request. The good thing is I had a kink in my neck on Sunday morning or Monday morning. I couldn't even look to my left, so I couldn't even play practice rounds. So I had plenty of time to chat with the media, but it was pretty cool, man. Definitely Augusta is For those listeners who've never been, it's everything you dreamed of and more in person.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it, but I mean, you first time there, I can only imagine you're salivating. I mean, it really reminds me a little bit about Ryan Moore getting into this Ryder Cup really the week before and having to just kind of go and not really having any plans. I mean, you're showing up at the Masters and you had no idea you were going to be there, as you mentioned, 24 hours before, and you get this kink in your neck. You don't get to play a practice round, so your first round at Augusta National was Thursday in the tournament, right?
That's correct. Yeah, it was when they announced me to the first tee. I had hit some golf balls, but my mom and dad drove in from South Florida and drove up to Atlanta. All the scenarios that played out there were pretty special, you know, for a kid. One, obviously getting to play in the Masters, riding a 2-week winning streak, but then looking out into the crowd there, the patrons, and seeing my mom and my dad, how proud he was that his son was playing there. And it's emotional when I talk about it, just because I think every kid wants to, get that approval from pops, you know, and it was a pretty sweet moment when I looked over on number 14 in the practice round as I'm walking the golf course with a putter in hand. And I look over through the crowd, I see my dad and I go, this is on 14, not 11, not 12, right, not 13, but on 14. And he still kind of has this glassy, you know, amazed look. And I said, pretty cool, hey, Dad. And he just kind of, with his jaw forward, thumbs up in the air, and he just nodded. Like that was the moment for me as a kid, as a young man, when Dad gave me his thumbs up, like, you've done good.
you said awesome. Well, you told me of a kind of a crazy experience as you left when you missed the cut. I mean, you missed the cut. You're driving out of Augusta down Magnolia Lane. You have you purchased a cup from the merchandise tent because you said you wanted a memento. You didn't know if you'd ever return. And you put your golf ball, you played in it, but then you stopped and did something a little sneaky. What'd you do there as you were leaving the Masters after missing the cut, not knowing if you'd ever be back again?
Yeah, so that was the deal. So when I walked up 18, we'll back up about 45 minutes. I tee off on 18 thinking this could be the last time I ever play this golf course. And I was, yeah, as I said earlier, I was on my way to shooting a couple mid 70s. I forget what I even shot, but it was not pretty. And I took a drink of water on the tee box in the little green Masters cup. And I took a drink, I handed it to my caddy. I said, put this in your bib. Well, he grabbed it from me and then crumpled it up and stuck it in the bib. And I'm like, dude, I wanted to keep that. He's like, oh man, I didn't know. So anyway, I played the 18th hole, pins in the front right, I make birdie. And so, you know, my thought was, well, I'm keeping this golf ball, obviously. And so as I sit here, I'm looking at it. So when I left, went into the gift shop, we got some swag. I bought a Masters glass. It's about a 12 ounce glass, and it has the Masters logo, 1996. And on the back, it has all the former champions, up until the last one on the thing was 95 Ben Crenshaw. And, anyway, so we're driving down Magnolia Lane and I stop the car. I run out and go over to the practice bunker and scooped out some sand. And I poured out my drink and scooped out some sand and took it home with us. And I put it in the glass. So in the glass that sits in my office, it's sitting here on my desk right now. It's that glass with the sand from Augusta, which is white as white. Now get this, Top Flight Tour Zebalata 90 compression, number one.
Hey, that's so great.
With the Stenko on the side, and then my little, the pin they give us, you know, when you register, you're given a number. Your caddy wears that number on his caddy bib, and I was number 76. And it says player 76, my little pin. So in this cup is my pin, my golf ball that I birdied 18 with, and the sand from the Masters. Pretty cool. So I mean, it's something. When I left, I thought I may never come back. I need something to, you know, remember this by. And little did I know that we were going to get Crystal for making eagles. And I made at least one eagle during that first Masters. And So that showed up later on too. But it's a cool memento. You know, it's something that, you know, as long as I don't lose it, I can't find the crystal glasses that I eagled all the four par three or par fives at Augusta over the 3 years that I played. And I don't know where they're at. They're at my office. So my wife must have, our last move, must have packed them in a box. So they're probably in a box. I hope she didn't throw them away.
Hopefully not. I hope she doesn't
either. They're in a box somewhere. Well, I know, but it's cool.
Yeah. And I wanted to bring you on really to talk about 97. I just love your Master stories. They're so great. But, you know, you play 96, you miss the cut. As you mentioned, you're driving out of Magnolia Lane onto Washington, and you're not sure you'll ever return. And sure enough, you get into the field in 97, and we're 20 years from that week. I mean, it's been 20 years since you were in that field again, a second time. You actually got to play practice rounds this time, but you were in the field when Tiger ran away and really, like I said, introduced himself to the world. But you had a chance on Saturday to do something crazy. But before we get to Saturday, for people that don't know, you get, I think it's a bowl. It's a bowl or a vase or something for low round of the day. You had a chance to get that, and you got absolutely hosed. Was that Friday?
That was Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, I ride into Augusta, a much different person or player, if you will, in 97. I won it in Hawaii in February, so that got me in, right? So now I've won again. You know, I finished off the 96 season winning in Japan and at Kapalua in a silly season event, and then win early again the next year in Hawaii. So my game is starting to mature, and I'm starting to believe that, okay, I can win tournaments, right? And so I come into Augusta obviously feeling like, you know, I got a chance that if I can putt well, I can win here. I don't drive the ball real straight, but I was pretty long. I wasn't the longest, but I was in the top, you know, 10% of guys out there. And I hit a high booming cut. I'm a good iron player. So I thought if I can roll it good, I had like 12 three putts in 2 days the first year. And I thought if I can roll it good, I got a chance. So I go out of the blocks early and I shot 68 or 69. I really can't remember the exact number, but the thing is John Houston comes by later on, and he blows it dead right on 18 off the tee over in 10, like the 10 rough fairway line. I didn't even know what was over there, right of the trees on 18. I didn't even know it was number 10. but anyway, he found his golf ball and somehow hit some big high draw over the trees and holes it for eagle two to nip me by a shot to get low round of the day. So he opens up the first round lead by one over me, and he got the hardware.
Yeah,
that was fun.
Yeah, it was 67 for Houston. You shoot 68. Zinger shoots 69. And, of course, Tiger famously goes 40-30 for 70. So those were the four scores. So you get nipped from the most insane hole out. Another one of those things, and I'm going to get into this, but one of those moments that you don't see the tape of that much, you know? You don't see this absurd hole out that you would see now. I mean, of course, with all the cameras and all the coverage that you get of these majors. But, you know, it's kind of crazy. But you had an interesting moment on Saturday. I mean, you have a chance on Saturday on the 18th green twice to land in the final group with this young guy that is taking this golf course by storm, to land in the final group in 1997, and you really got hosed twice.
Yeah, you know, I hit a really nice shot behind the pin, back right pin, and I was about 10 feet behind the hole. I hit a great putt, and if I make this putt, I get Tiger. I know it. I'm looking at the board. I'm like, I'm in. I'm playing with Tiger on Sunday. And I hit a really good putt, didn't break, just hung on the edge and missed it. And I was obviously pretty bummed. But a couple groups later, Costantino Rocca shows up, and he's got about a 20 footer from below the hole, below to the right, I believe. And if he makes it, he gets Tiger. Or if he makes it, he gets Tiger. If he misses it, I get Tiger. He's got 20 footer, so twice as long as mine. And that dude made it. And so he ended up playing with Tiger on Sunday, and I got paired with Tom Kite. But it was, it would have been so cool. I, you know, in my mind, I love thinking that he would never have won by 12 had I been paired with him. And, you know, all those, you know, you try and say the right things and, you know, who knows, but I mean, we don't know. Right. I mean, I would have worn red hat, shirt, shoes, glove, ball. I would have, you know, done whatever I could to distract him, but He probably would have won by 20 shots had he been paired with me. I might have not finished. I'd probably still be chunking it in the race creek. But it was one of those moments that would have been cool. I kind of lived looking behind me. I played like a dog from the get go, and so I did a lot of Tiger watching. I knew that the magnitude of the moment, and it was a pretty special day. I do remember one shooting 74, two not being very happy, and that's frustrating to think that here I am on Masters Sunday, I'm in the second to last group, and I'm probably walking around like some spoiled 26-year-old that, you know, is mad because his day didn't go well. It's like, right. Are you kidding me? I mean, I would, the thought of getting to go play Augusta just, you know, in June would be really cool now, you know, but I was there, I should have been in the moment just soaking it up regardless of what I was doing. But you know, hey, in my mind, I thought I got a chance to win a golf tournament here and it's pretty crazy, but
yeah, well,
that was fun.
Yeah. You had a moment, you told me that, and I'm sure people will see this, but I think it was ESPN. You said came over to your place and was showing you a whole bunch of old footage as they prepared for their basically 20th anniversary wrap of what Tiger did. And you had a moment. I'm going to say it's a Ben Crenshaw moment. It rivals Crenshaw pointing to the cameras in 99 at the Ryder Cup and saying, I have a feeling. You got to walk me through it again, but you had a moment, and there's tape of this, I believe. You saying something to the tune of Tiger's beatable, or this guy's not, you know, we can catch him, something like that, right?
You know what's funny, Shane, is I don't remember saying this at all, but I saw myself say it, and I heard it, and it shocked me. So, yes, I was going through some footage ESPN was showing me, and I've never seen the Masters footage from that week. The only thing I've ever seen since that day was what they air every year, the little recap of the 97 Masters. So they, you know, I've like three or four of my shots and that's it. But I got to watch all this stuff. They had all this footage. And apparently on the Saturday, you know, in the media compound there, I was finishing my interview. And as I was walking away, somebody asked something about tomorrow. And I couldn't hear the question. All I heard and saw was me turning back to the camera and saying, he can be beat, and then turn around and walk it off. And when I heard myself and saw it, I thought, what an idiot. I can't believe you said that. So you said a Ben Crenshaw moment, probably more like a Stephen Ames moment.
Yeah, 9-8. I love it.
Holy crap. So yeah, that was, you know, but I was 26. And the thing is, the year before, what happened? You know, Greg Norman blew up 6-shot lead. Or was it 2 years before? I can't even remember.
It was
now.
The year before, yeah.
So, you know, that's right, 96. So it's possible. If he had gone out and shoot 76 and, you know, somebody shoots 66, that's 10 shots. I think he had a 9-shot lead, I believe, over
Yeah, 9
Roka
shots over
something
Roka,
like
yeah.
That.
Yeah, 9 over Roka, so 10 over you, yeah.
It was doable. You know, I had a 66 in me, you know, but it was funny. When the first day when he shot 40 on the front nine, he was right behind me, and as he was coming up, he was 4 over, and I kind of chuckled. I'm like, yeah, nice play. And, you know, so a couple moments there, I wish I'd had back, or a couple thoughts, because it obviously we weren't prepared for the greatness that became Tiger Woods. I mean, we knew he was a good player. There's no question. And what he did that week, he just dismantled the golf course with his length, with his power, with his putting, and with his mind. And from that day on, I think he started dismantling the players more so than the golf courses. Because I think, as you know, and I think the world knows, that when Tiger set foot on a golf course, after that, he knew he was going to win. And we knew that he was going to win. And he knew that we knew that he was going to win. And, you know, we knew that he knew that we knew that he was going to win.
It was over for everybody. Yeah, that was the key. It was mental. And I asked you this, but I mean, you know, you're 26. He was what? I think he was 21 years old. I mean, you've been out there for a few years. You'd won a couple times. I just wonder, I mean, do you think that there'd have been a big intimidation factor if you had landed in that final group? I mean, do you think you would have stepped foot on there going, I'm playing someone that's playing a different game, as so many guys had said that week?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know. I was already nervous. Tom Kite was our Ryder Cup captain for that next year, and I was trying to make a team. So for me, it was a big day on more levels than just trying to win a major. You know, I knew that if I had a good day, one, I might could win this tournament. Two, I could potentially finish second and impress our Ryder Cup captain, I think a second place finish would have got me on the team in points. And so there was a lot riding on that day for me. And I don't know if I would have been any more nervous playing with Tiger Woods than I was playing with Tom Kite personally. Now, 3 years later, probably been more nervous playing with Tiger Woods. But at that time there, again, he hadn't shown his true colors yet. You know, he'd still won a few tournaments, but he wasn't the Tiger Woods that we have all admired since then. So I may have been less nervous playing with Tiger Woods under the circumstances, because I think, you know, at that point, the Ryder Cup, like, that was a pretty big deal. Obviously, the majors are bigger, but Ryder Cup's a pretty big deal too. And unfortunately, I never got to set foot in a uniform or on the team. But yeah, that was. I still love to think what could have happened.
Right.
You know, who knows? But it would have been fun. It's always fun to just chuckle and joke about it. But in reality, we have no idea.
Well, Paul, I appreciate you giving a little recap of those 2 years at the Masters, in particular 97. I mean, it's, as you said, it's crazy to think back and look back and what ifs. But a couple of putts, and you're in every highlight in 1997. You're not in three. You're in every single one as we sit 20 years ago. That's crazy to think.
It is crazy. You know, the cool thing, I love when I see the picture of Tiger after the putt went in, and he's got his arm in the air, you know, that classic picture of him doing a little celebration, and right behind him is a scoreboard, and there's my name. And it's like, I still look at that, and it's getting to the point where 20 years, like, there are some things I don't remember. And like I say, seeing the video footage was pretty impressive. The fact that I don't remember saying what I said was, you know, it shows how old I'm getting, but they can't take that away. You know, I was there. I have a glass to remember it. I have a golf ball, but then that year, 97, it's in every time I'll see the picture of Tiger Woods with his arm in the air. There's the scoreboard, and it's kind of fun, dude. Like I say, a kid, I grew up on a 9-hole Navy golf course in Port Hueneme, California. You know, it was, I didn't have all the talent as a junior golfer. I didn't, you know, I won a couple little events, but never played nationally, you know, went to college and won a couple tournaments, but didn't make I was an honorable mention All American, but never on a team, you know, so I wasn't a world beater, you know, I just was a grinder and a slow progressor, if you will. So to go from Port Hueneme, California at the CB base, 9-hole Kukuya Poana grass greens to, you know, second to last group at Augusta on Sunday. That's pretty cool. It's a good ending to a career to me.
Yeah, not bad. Well, like you said, they can't take it away. You'll always see Stankowski under that Tiger Woods thing when you look at 97. Paul, I appreciate you joining us. We'll get back with you probably later in the season. I'd love to have you on as we kind of break down stuff as we continue to work together on PGA Tour Live.
Yeah, anytime, bud. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of The Clubhouse. We have more to come this week, so make sure you're subscribed. Make sure you are following along. You can follow that Twitter account at The Clubhouse Pod. And a reminder, we've talked a lot about OGO's Renegade backpacks on The Clubhouse, but I wanted to point you toward the Newt backpack by OGO. Weighing in at just 2.2 pounds, the Newt has a padded compartment for your laptop, a padded tablet sleeve, large compartment for books, headphones, maybe a podcast microphone that you're crossing the country with. It's a real cool look and perfect for a kid in need of a new backpack for school or someone trying to make their morning commute a bit more organized. You can't pick a bad backpack at OGO.com, so make sure to check out their entire selection. Give the Renegade a look. Give the Newt a look. OGO.com. OGIO.com. As I mentioned, we've got plenty to come the rest of the week. Follow along with the podcast. Check out what we're doing at foxsports.com/golf. You can follow me on Facebook to get really updated news articles and stories we're doing at Shane Bacon Golf on Facebook. And of course, just get yourself ready. It starts on Thursday. So many big storylines headed in. We're so excited. Check back with the Clubhouse on Wednesday for another podcast. And with that, I tell you, have a great week. I hope you're fired up.